was a brand new car with 4 miles on it, and we gave it back with 1,500 miles on it.
Damn.
So we did some driving.
Yeah. I drove through from Michigan, the south of Michigan to the Upper Peninsula once. And the only state that felt longer than that was Alabama. And I think that was just because it was Alabama.
Well, you should go to Texas.
Well, I don't ever want to go to fucking Texas.
Went there in college and we spent 12 hours driving to Texas. We're like, cool, we're in Texas. And then spent 12 more hours driving through Texas.
Yeah. That's kind of the way Florida feels, depending on where you're going in Florida.
Oh, God, yeah. Florida just drags on forever.
Just America. Yeah, I do not wish to go to Florida at all.
America's dick.
The thing that makes it so insufferable is it's so fucking flat.
Yes, like it is.
You can just see where you can see the edge of the earth from, you know, where you're driving. It's just depressing.
Yeah, the highest spot in Florida is like 347 feet above sea level or something like that.
Ew. I didn't realize it was that crap.
Yeah, that's why if the oceans rise, Florida's gone.
Yep.
I mean, oh no.
It's all swamp anyway. So.
Yeah, it'll be double swamp.
It'll be salt swamp.
Florida sucks.
Yeah.
So. I was telling the chat I finally caught up on Resident Alien.
Okay.
It is definitely my favorite show going right now.
It's just, it's special effects light enough that they can afford to keep doing it.
Yep.
But it has enough vignettes of outer spacey alien stuff that is obviously computer generated and, you know, I'm totally okay with it. To keep that thirst alive, I guess.
I love the fact that the grays look awful.
Oh God, they look pitiful.
They look like they look poorly.
When he throws the one and it falls off that ledge and just flat onto the ground.
Yes. Yes. They look poorly done. And somebody was like, that just kills it for me. And I'm like, nah, but the grays are just such a pitiful species anyways, and this show really plays into the fact that they're just fucking pitiful. I'm okay with the fact that they look like shit.
When Heather is in her blue avian form,
she was amazing.
That looks like a mask. That looks like a puppet thing. It's exactly what I expect. I didn't expect, you know,
I'm
Mark Ruffalo the Hulk here.
Yeah, like, they know their audience. They know what they're here for.
It's primarily a sci-fi comedy.
Yes. No reason to break the fucking bank on Expanse level sci-fi.
Have fun. Make it. You know, do the scene where they're flying. That was hilarious.
Yes.
Yeah. Not everything needs to be prestige, and I think too many people are getting like shitty prestige level, and it's like.
Yes.
I'd rather you not try than try and fail like this.
Yes. Lean into the camp of not doing, you know, the best. Right. And I'm okay. Like, I still maintain Velocipaster is one of the best worst movies ever made.
Oh, and for fuck's sake.
No, part of it is that it's so bad. It's good, and it was on purpose.
And you keep telling us, but it's not going to make me watch it. You're like that guy that comes to my door. Do you have time to talk about Velocipaster?
Bro, I'm telling you, if you watch that movie, you will have a good time.
Yeah, it's just the effort to actually watch the movie.
Okay.
I mean, I signed up for Paramount Plus for a month so I could watch Resident Alien. But I also wanted to watch American Ultra because we were talking about it, so I had to watch that.
I don't know what that is.
It's the movie we talked about last week. You didn't know what it was then either.
I don't remember.
Jesse Eisenberg and Chris Stewart.
Yeah.
That was a better movie than it should have been.
Exactly.
Like, those are the type of ones that I like. Like, it is absurd. We know it's going to be absurd going in. And, like, I can't tell if Kristen Stewart's controlling us now. Because, like, I think she's just decided that bad acting is her acting. And she's just going to do it every time.
Because, like, she was completely in her role. You know, that's right. How I expected that character to... I mean, I don't think... I'm not calling it bad acting. Hey, I'm not an actor, but I'm a bad judge at acting. But
you are.
I think her character was believable. His was over the top with the, you know, cowardice, nervous, you know, freaking.
Right.
Her
facial expression, stuff like that.
That's just her.
Just her face all the time.
Yeah, either that or she's potential. She's forever constipated.
Yeah,
I mean, she signed up.
She's just leaning into it. That's all she's doing. Like, it's not.
She signed up to be in one of the worst movie franchises ever.
And I hope she got paid handsomely. I'm sure.
I'm sure she did.
I mean, the woman who wrote the books makes $30 million a year.
Yeah.
That's criminal.
Thank you for reminding me.
I mean, I gotta imagine it's diminished a little bit, but
I too am jealous.
At the height, that was.
That's and I'll be honest. It 100% is jealousy. Like, how the fuck she turned those substandard books into some fucking $30 million, like. She'll never have to work again. She'll never have to write another book again. Her family for generations is not going to have to do a goddamn thing.
No.
I mean, honestly, the fact that she never has to write a book again is
the gift. Yeah, that's.
You're not wrong there.
Because, like, what if you had to watch, like, 50 Shades of Grey, new movie, every 3 years for the rest of your life? Because... I'm pretty sure she would just keep making them. Or, well, no, that's the other No Talent hack.
Right.
Sorry.
Yeah. 50 Shades was just fan fiction, right?
It was fan fiction of that.
Yeah. I'm going to fucking smack you for reminding me that that exists, but...
Oh, no.
But, I mean, all she did was play in the...
Conversations we had a week ago, not at all.
I didn't remember it until we started talking about it. Now I remember it. I even said as much. I don't like. That's not a movie that ever struck me as something I was going to watch.
It's worth the time. Okay. Goggins.
I feel like we should have episodes where we do movie swaps. Where Chad has to watch a Ray suggestion and Ray has to watch a Chad suggestion and then they debate it.
Oh.
Because, like, I watch it too, but I don't think my discourse would be that entertaining, so.
Ray wouldn't do it, though, because he knows what the first movie will be.
Velocipaster.
Sure.
I would watch Velocipaster, but I'd have to have access to it. I don't know where's it at?
Amazon.
Freebie. Yeah, it's probably on regular Prime too.
Okay. I'll watch that this week if you watch American Ultra.
And where's American Ultra?
Peacock.
You said Paramount Plus.
Paramount.
That's going to be a problem.
I watched it on Peacock.
Okay.
It might be on multiple things.
Yeah, not Paramount. Peacock. Sorry. It's where I watched Resident Alien. Same thing.
I was literally going off of what you just said, so I didn't verify.
No, okay. That was a.
I'll watch American Ultra. It's fine. I'll watch American Ultra.
I mean, he's mad about people making money they don't deserve. Trump's going to make a bunch of money for a shitty Twitter.
No, he's not. He's
selling it?
I mean, they can't tank the stock price enough that he doesn't make good money off of this. He's not going to make as many millions as he thinks, but...
I don't know, man. I think the bubble has been bursted.
I don't know.
Right, but he got the stuff, like, not at the IPO price. He got it at whatever the SPAC price was way back in the day.
Correct, but he can't sell for another 4-5 months and 2 weeks.
Sure. I don't think that there's not going to be there people there propping up the value as a meme longer than it should be.
Well, it might do well because Twitter's, or X, or whatever the fuck you want to call it, is people are leaving it in droves.
It doesn't matter. They're not joining that. Like,
well, no, it's a different audience.
Tens of millions of dollars a quarter right now. Like, yeah. More than your normal, like, oh, well, we're going negative till we're positive. It's like we're just hemorrhaging money because nobody cares. And if Trump ever left, the whole thing would collapse.
Yeah.
Like, it's an entire platform based off of kind of being a
fandom.
Dumbass.
Yep.
But at least the fandom, like, if it was the My Little Pony Twitter, like, I still think that would do better than Trump Twitter. Because there's less of a chance that somebody's going to try and cancel the ponies.
True. That is a damn good point, sir.
Well, the next Boyd Crowder, Wilford Goggins, what was his first name? Walton Goggins show starts tonight at
9 o'clock.
Yeah,
what's that?
Fallout.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
like from the video game, or
yes. Yeah. And it's already been renewed for a second season.
Honestly, they should do that more often if they know it's going to be at least passable, because that will get me to watch it more than
I think. Yeah. They give you that announcement so you'll chance a toe in the water.
And it's smart, because I definitely would influence my decision more to watch it if it was renewed.
So
it's just because there was a season coming up, and I was like, okay, well, couldn't be that bad.
He plays Valentine, right?
No, it's a completely original story.
Well, he looks like a synth. When Valentine wasn't he the synth detective or something?
I think you're thinking of Zombie.
Oh, so you play Ghoul?
I believe he's a ghoul. He doesn't have a nose.
Oh.
So I did watch the second best man in Ray's world in a movie the other day. Because we all know that the first best man in Ray's world is Hugh Grant.
Hands down.
For sure.
So number two would be
Chris Evans, I assume?
No.
Oh.
I kind of figured that you would say Jim Gaffigan.
Oh. Yeah, he's up there, but I wouldn't have guessed him for a movie.
I watched a movie called It's Kind of a Funny Story from 2010. I had never heard of this movie. It has Jim Gaffigan, Zach Galifianakis, Emma Roberts, Lauren Graham, who was on a very popular TV show.
I know who Lauren Graham is, yes.
Yeah.
She's one of those Linda Carter clones.
Yeah, yeah.
I referred to her, when she was on that show, Parenthood, Karen watched it, and I just referred to her
as
a hot daughter.
Parenthood, yes. And then Keir Gilchrist, who, like...
Bad Santa. He was in Bad Santa.
Keir Gilchrist was?
No. Lord Graham.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The name is familiar, and I know the person, but I can't picture his face currently.
Yeah, like, I watched him in the film, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I know who this is. But then, like, I look at his body of work, and I'm like, yeah, but I don't know what I know this guy from.
He in some kind of, like, teen novel made into a movie type thing, or is that just everything he's in?
Probably everything that he's been in. Atypical? Yes,
yeah,
that's
yeah,
what
yeah, yeah, that's from. It.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Character.
Yeah.
I love yeah. that
show. So,
that was a really good show.
It was. So he plays a character with mental health disorders who is ready to commit suicide and ends up in a psychiatric ward of a hospital
with Zach Galifianakis.
With Zach Galifianakis and Emma Roberts and a whole bunch of other people. Dickie Bennett from Justified is an orderly.
Okay.
And he looked like, I didn't think that Justified was going on in 2010, but it probably was now that I'm thinking about it. Because yeah. he looks like Dickie Bennett. Like, you're not like, oh, that's the guy who played. You're like, no, motherfucker, that is Dickie
Bennett. Oh, yeah, he's got the, well, the...
The hair, the hat.
The cast beard. Photos, yeah, he's got the goatee yeah. and then the mullet. Yeah.
Yeah. You're like, oh, yeah, okay. That's... Yep. So yeah, it was like a dramedy, but it was lighthearted enough that I wasn't mad that I watched it. I'm not a big drama kind of person.
Well, Jim Gaffigan is going to be in a movie coming up here May 3rd, I think it is.
Deadpool 3?
I don't know if he's in that.
I kind of figured that's what you were talking about. I don't
know. But he is in a movie with Hugh Grant, Melissa McCarthy, Bill Burr, Jerry Seinfeld, James Masters, Marsden.
Yes.
There you go.
Amy Schumer, Dan Levy, Rachel Harris, Christian Slater.
This does not it sound is, promising.
It is called Unfrosted. It's a comedy about the post-Kellogg's war to be the first to come out with the Pop-Tart.
Okay.
Watch the trailer. It looks fucking hilarious.
Huge.
And the only reason I'm excited is because that was like the first stand-up I convinced Bean to watch. Was that Jerry Seinfeld stand-up, and he talks about the invention of the Pop-Tart and how it changed his life as a child. You know, we had toast and we had cereal, and when the Pop-Tart came out, it blew his mind, you know, all this stuff. And yeah, he's very animated. It's funny.
They have been selling this as a passion project of his.
Yes, and it's May 3rd. It's going to be on Netflix.
Hugh Grant plays Thurl Ravencroft.
What?
Yes.
From the singer from The Grinch?
Yes. He's also the voice of Tony the Tiger.
Oh, okay.
The original voice of Tony the Tiger.
So
yeah, I guess I haven't heard it.
Seinfeld is in this?
Yes.
Yes. He plays...
Main character.
Yeah, he's the main character. He's one of the scientists there, or the breakfast scientists. Engineers that are coming up with the Pop-Tart.
Yeah.
I think Bill Burr is like the head of Post or Kellogg's.
Yeah.
Gaffigan's like a baker. It looks hilarious.
I don't give a fuck who's in it. You said two names. I won't watch it.
Who?
Seinfeld and Bill Burr.
Ugh.
I fucking hate both of them.
Okay. Oh, I worried you were out because I said Thurl Ravencroft.
No, no.
It's like, damn, Jerry that's Seinfeld. A weird hate.
No, Jerry Seinfeld and Bill Burr, I just fucking hate them.
All right, see, that's
I maybe could have tolerated Bill Burr on his own.
He's a minor role, but you know, if you don't like Seinfeld, he's going to be wall to wall. So yeah.
No, I fucking hate Seinfeld.
Like personally, or because of the show, or because of something else.
Okay, so I like
say fuck enough.
No, I liked Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee.
Sure.
I fucking hated Seinfeld, the show.
Okay.
Like,
well, this isn't the show.
Okay, but Jerry's comedy in his persona is more Seinfeld than it is a random dude in a car getting coffee. Like he was more of an interviewer in that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was tolerable.
You don't like his comedy style.
At all.
All right. Yeah. I mean, I'm fine with that. I just didn't know if there was something else where he personally wronged you or something.
Nope.
Yeah, I was wondering, did he touch you? What's wrong?
No, he did not. He did not, but...
They're not well enough.
Yeah.
Don't think that
is
would
it okay
help
if I'm cases. Jealous?
You could have told me that they cast Trump, and I would be more inclined to watch it than Jerry Seinfeld.
Trump probably does eat Pop-Tarts, but...
The same people that produced the Bee movie that Jerry voiced the Bee in is producing this, I think.
I don't know if that helps or not, because I don't know...
No,
anything. Well, not Chad for sure.
But. I thought it was. I think we took the girls to see it. It was cute, but it was okay. It's not something I've watched again. So
it was one of those things that during the time that it happened, a lot of bad movies like that were coming out. So it was just kind of like, they gave an animated movie to a name.
Uh huh.
Oh, I'm not mad at the movie, but like, it wasn't great.
True.
Yeah. But it also during that time was pretty standard. It wasn't like it was even noteworthy for being bad.
No, I mean it's not like it was the worst movie ever made, but
because we get so passionate about this movies we like, people we like, people we hate, I will say this. I'm willing to do the you watch my movie, I watch your movie.
Uh-huh.
But we get three strikes, and then we're done with this.
wait. Three strikes, and then we're done with this whole thing?
With the movie watching. Jeff and Dylan get their turn to fight over movies.
Okay. I mean...
How do you determine strikes?
Yeah, you owe me an hour and a half of my life back.
Bro! That's... Okay, I mean...
You're allowed to do it, too.
So then, I feel like before, like when you suggest a movie, but before it's watched, like you have to argue, like...
Oh, there'll be I want you to watch this.
Right, because if it's like, great because of cinematography, but this sucks, and you come back like, oh, this part sucks, be like, yeah, I told you that going in. I just need to know,
I did watch Oppenheimer this weekend, too.
So did I.
How was it?
It was a very strange way to tell a story.
It was.
There were times when I'm like, I'm just looking at his hair and... measuring the amount of it and the amount of gray it has to try to guesstimate at what timeline we're dealing with right now. Or what time period, like post, pre, during. You know, I got a little lost here and there. But I like the way they filmed it.
Yes.
Okay.
I mean,
yeah, I saw it in theaters, so it was not, I wasn't distracted by anything.
I am pretty ignorant about the history, you know, the whole, so I didn't really know where it was going.
I listened to, well, there were two separate podcasts that kind of covered like parts of World War II and like.
Yeah, I knew about Fuchs and I knew about the town and I knew about Oppenheimer and, you know, all the scientists and I knew all that. I didn't realize, I guess, they were trying to destroy him at the end and it was all to basically, you know, benefit somebody.
Because he regretted it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the guy who made it had an opinion about it. We can't have that.
Yeah.
But nowadays we just don't attribute it to one person anymore.
I mean, so, but that was kind of.
We know who invented the drone. No. So we can't really attack that guy.
Yeah, but.
The drone strike.
I mean, the thing is, what Oppenheimer did was more than just like create a new weapon. Like,
he created a new science. Yeah.
Yeah. I knew a lot about Oppenheimer's story. I knew that there was like a desire to ruin him at the end, but I did not understand like the angle that they were trying to play.
Yeah, I didn't know why and who was it real or was it for benefit?
It was very interesting, and then I, you know, doing some digging and whatnot, I'm like, wow, the, you know, just America being America.
Yeah.
Yeah, the 50s got kind of
Got a little pinky scared with the government.
At the same time, like, I thought it was wild that they literally, up until it dropped, believed there was a chance it could just keep going and destroy the entire world.
Oh, absolutely.
That was awesome. Possibility. And they were like, we're going to do it anyway.
Yep.
Well, they didn't really have a call. The government was going to do it anyways, but like, okay. When they're testing it too. Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, that. I mean, there are still some people in the physics community that have tried to explain why it doesn't, or because based on physics, it should.
Why it peters out and doesn't keep splitting.
Right. Because of the amount of energy, the amount of force.
Is it a matter of if our atmosphere was more dense, it would?
Don't know. I mean, I will say, you know, they've done the math, and there is definitely a point, like a size of bomb that we could make feasibly that would.
And if you elect Trump, he'll do it.
Oh, he's dying to do it. He just
screaming his pants. Man.
Oh God, yeah.
That stopped that conflict in Israel real quick.
Yeah,
I don't have any power to do anything about it, but I'm almost just. Just end it. One of you guys just ruin it for everybody so we don't have to deal with it anymore.
Yeah, they'll just fight in some other country then.
Yeah.
I mean, there's active wars going on in multiple countries right now. It's not like that's the only one.
Yeah.
I saw a meme, a number of journalists that died in World War II, and it was like 47 in Vietnam, 67 in blah, blah, blah. And in Gaza, 109 in the last 6 months.
Yep.
Well, I feel like part of that is any idiot with their cell phone can show up in Gaza. And in World War II, most of the people that were writing stuff were just attached to the actual army units. Yeah. So if they died, it was a soldier dying and not a journalist.
Well, and also, I guess it's become practice of somebody writes an article, you wait till they get home and you blow up the whole building.
Yeah.
The building they were staying in, you mean? Like, yeah, actively in? Or, okay.
No, the building they live in.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Hey, you write an article, we'll kill you and your family.
And everybody else in the building.
And everybody, all your neighbors, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's not one side or the other doing that. That's everybody.
No, it's both, yeah.
It's gross.
Neither of them are clean here.
No, God.
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, I don't know anybody that should be arguing that, like, both sides are good people.
No. The governments on both sides are fucktards.
It's just one has dramatically the heavyweight in comparison.
Well, yeah, it's because they're getting somewhere around.
They have every
$1 million a day.
They're the persecuted side, and you know everyone has to. No one can go against them.
They've got without getting too conspiracy here, like, or you know. They've got a large group of lobbying people that absolutely will go after you if you say anything that's even like brushing up against. Maybe they're not right.
I mean, the United States government pays that country $11 million a day for defense spending.
And they have state-funded healthcare.
Yep. Yep.
We don't, ooh, but they do.
I did enjoy that they were making or starting to make the clergy class actually sign up for the draft, and they were all getting pissy about it.
Really?
Yeah. Because they've let that get out of hand. Like, I was reading up on it, and, like, the clergy was basically, like, protected because they needed scholars after World War II.
Yeah.
And so they were like, okay, cool, you guys get special, like, the government pays them a stipend. They're just there to do religious stuff, whatever. But like, they've gone up like 200-fold since World War II, and it's not exactly. It's like saying like, oh, we just need to keep all these telegraph operators around. We'll just pay them to be on call.
Yeah,
not needed anymore. There's so many of them, so they're basically just a subset of people that are 100% for the war because they don't have to fight in it ever.
Right.
And now they're like, hey guys, guess what? We're going to have you fight in it. And they're like, what? This is unfair. So I just like it when hypocrites get shit on.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah. But the only reason I knew about that is because I was on Twitter or something and they were like the protest looked like a Renaissance painting.
Really?
Those accounts that was like, whatever. Because they were wearing like four different kinds of weird hats and stuff. And
it was just
like, it was hilarious because they were all screaming at like the cops coming by. And it's just, it was very much set up like a Renaissance painting. And I enjoyed those types of accounts. Like, did you ever see the art but sports?
Yes.
Yes. That one has been hilarious. And that guy is not like, he doesn't have a special research thing. It's literally just pictures from his memory that he has to like, oh, I remember that one. That'll work here.
Wow.
And then he goes and finds a picture of it. And then he has to get credit for the photographer. And then he posts it. But like the NFL accounts were actively tweeting him during the season. Like, hey, what about this one? Hey, what about this one? Because they get good traction.
What else is happening in the world?
I didn't watch
anything good.
I didn't watch anything highbrow this weekend. It was WrestleMania weekend, so I watched 8 hours of wrestling.
I did see the wrestling was on. I heard they kept having commercials for it.
Is WrestleMania just once a year then?
Yes.
Okay. You have other pay-per-views, but WrestleMania is the one that's once per year. and so they're just random.
Well, then you got like SummerSlam or something like that.
I mean, there's the big four. Big four events.
Summer, spring, fall, winter slams. Yeah.
Well, that's
winter wrestling and summer slamming and
accurate, but
spring plinging.
Yeah. Well, regardless,
fall fucking.
Regardless, I have talked about it on the show before.
You have. You have. Wasn't there some sort of controversy about some person who got put in the Hall of Fame or something?
Possibly.
There's a wrestling Hall of Fame?
Uh-huh.
There is.
Oh, yeah.
Is there an acting Hall of Fame?
Yes.
Okay.
Is there?
Yes.
Okay.
It's,
I mean, there's like Lifetime Achievement Awards, so I just kind of figured, but...
No matter how you slice it, I guess the Walk of Fame isn't just actors anymore.
No, you can just buy that.
Yeah, that is kind of a purchase type thing.
Yeah, you have enough money, you just buy a star in the Walk of Fame.
To an extent. I mean,
there's still a process, but...
Yeah, they have to actually say, okay, do more than 10 people know you? Okay, yeah. Sure, fine.
Right.
I think the Screen Actors Guild has a Hall of Fame. I don't know. Yeah, I just there's a couple of people in my Twitter feed that occasionally talk about the wrestling stuff, and they were up in arms about, I don't know, some dude who looks like he bleaches his hair until it's dead being put in the Hall of Fame.
You're gonna have to narrow it down.
Yeah, that's the
I mean, they certainly can't disqualify him for steroid scandals.
Right. I mean, some dude who has what appears to be the bleachest of the bleached hair, who looks like a wrestler, was inducted into the Hall of Fame or something, and everybody was all like, I don't know, up in arms about shit.
Was he just like a manager or like a team owner or something? Well, wasn't really a wrestler or something?
No, I believe he was a wrestler.
Right.
He looked, I mean, it'd be really weird if your team manager just wore the Speedos.
All I have is a picture of a guy with spiked blonde hair.
Yes, who, quote, looks like a wrestler.
Yeah. Didn't McMahon actually start wrestling?
After a lot of steroids, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
He also looks like a wrestler.
He's also gone now.
That is true. That is true. They did.
Did he die, or did they fire him? Or
He had to retire.
There were several scandals.
The sex trafficking one was really the icing on the cake. That.
Oh, there's a subject. Diddy, how's that going? How's your life?
I haven't heard any updates.
McMahon was actually trafficking?
There are allegations.
Interesting.
And they either hold enough weight or were enough of a pain in the ass for TKO, the company that owns WWE and UFC now.
Okay.
I don't think McMahon is a big enough of a draw these days to overcome
that he ended up retiring, and he's been slowly selling off his shares. But the product itself has never been better.
I'll take your word for it.
I don't have anything to measure it against.
Honestly, I don't care if you do or don't. I enjoy it.
No, I mean, no. I mean,
I'm not begrudging anybody anything.
Yeah, no, being completely honest, like, so the last time I personally gave a shit about wrestling. I was like 12. And there was that brief period of time when my oldest was allowed to watch wrestling at home. And so he just couldn't stop doing wrestling moves to the other two that I kind of knew a little bit about, like Batista and whatnot in the early teens.
But when did Iron Sheik retire?
A long time ago.
Okay, yeah, that's the last time I remember.
All the same, there are names that you would be familiar with. Like, everybody knows who The Rock is.
Yeah, yes, I can't believe
same guy in every movie.
I can't believe he's coming back to wrestling.
And he is white hot. He has white hot hate on him as a heel, and it is fucking magnificent.
Those were words.
He came back as a bad guy.
Okay.
Even if you haven't watched wrestling, most people have heard of the name Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream.
Uh-huh. Yeah, sure. Totally.
Okay. And this is why I don't talk about this on the show.
No, I've heard, I know enough about wrestling and, like, just from being around other things where people are talking about stuff. I know enough of the names right now, but it is funny when you turn it on and it's like, what the fuck is The Rock doing?
Yeah, I was kind of confused to see him in those commercials, but I didn't know any other face. So I was like, okay, he's there. He used to wrestle. He's a manager now or something. I don't know what. He has his own team. Do they have teams? Or is it just like pairs and stuff?
I don't know all the factions right now. Like, at times there were.
I don't think I've ever sat down and watched a whole, like, episode or event, nightly event of it. I've seen it in passing or come into the room after leaving and wrestling's on now. I'm like, oh, what is this? What are they doing? Okay.
This year was the culmination.
I don't follow it.
Year was the culmination of a story that they've been building for 3 years. And they've been effectively building it for 3 years.
That's a lot of work.
It was.
Oh, yeah.
And the payoff was goddamn magnificent. It involved ending a historic title reign that was like the fourth longest in the company's history.
Okay.
1,316 days.
It's a long time.
Yes, it is. And it was all sold as finishing a story. The story that that got started years ago, and like the guy that ended up ending that title reign and winning, Cody Rhodes. He is, by all accounts, just a great dude.
Is he Dusty's brother?
Son.
Okay.
So he's second generation. His older brother wrestles as well. He wrestles as Gold Dust. Well, wrestled as Gold Dust before he went to the other company.
Gold Dust. Yeah. I remember that.
Right. But when Cody Rhodes was getting his start, like, they just kept booking him to lose. And it finally got to the point where he had one last opportunity to win a match. And it was like, he either won and he got to stay, or he lost and he was gone. And he won. But they never really did anything with him after that. He was always just this random mid-card guy that never went anywhere. And then 10 years ago, he left the company, went out on the independent scene, and like, he was pissed and he was hurt
physically or emotionally.
And like, okay. this is not like part of the story. This is real. He was pissed and he was hurt, and I think that's what makes what made this 3-year arc so beautiful, because they were able to mix the story that they wanted to tell with the reality of what had happened, what had been going on. and what had happened. And so he won the Royal Rumble last year. Royal Rumble is a match where 30 guys, a guy comes out to the ring every 90 seconds. Ultimately, there are 30 competitors. It's an over-the-top rope deal. Last person in the ring wins. They can go after whichever major title they want at WrestleMania. He won it last year, went to WrestleMania, and then got fucked in the main event because there was this whole faction rolled up in with the previous champion, the Bloodline. And that is probably one of the best factions they've had in years as well, because it was, again, built on the reality of the Samoans have, like, the Samoan influence and presence in wrestling has been there for generations. I mean, The Rock is third generation. They all call each other cousin because they all say if you go back far enough, they're all related.
It's a small group of people, yeah.
Right. So they built this up, and then were able to effectively screw Cody out of a win last year. And so he spent the whole year pissed and angry and wanting to get another shot at it. He wins the Royal Rumble again this year, which is back to back, has only happened a couple of times. Most notably with Stone Cold Steve Austin. That's a name people have probably heard.
Yep. He was in the Bible, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Because Stone Cold said so. I believe that's how that worked. Yep. And so he wins the Rumble, and now The Rock comes back. Cody picks his shot. Like, at the end of the Rumble, it's very clear who he wants. Because the previous champion, Roman Reigns, was up in the rafters, or was up in like a skybox watching the event, because it's highly likely whoever won was going to go after him and his belt. And like, he just, from the ring, points up at the skybox. Very clearly, I'm coming for you. And then it's like within the next week, The Rock comes back. And he wants to go after the current champion at WrestleMania for reasons that don't even matter. This pisses off the wrestling community so much. This is how he came back as a bad guy. So now they are furious. Like, the wrestling community is now furious with The Rock. They changed the story based on, well, the claim is that they changed the story based off this. But there's also a claim that this was the Rock's idea in the first place to come back and make this a more interesting story. So he's come back as this, his persona this time is the final boss. Like, the last person you got to get by. Thanks, buddy. Good night. So.
Well, he did beat Scissors. So.
Yes. And so. The Rock is back, and he's dressed in fucking ridiculous. It's absolutely worth Googling Rock WWE 2024 just to see some of the absolutely batshit outfits he's come out in. Because, like, he's dressed in, like, a weird pimpy gigolo. Like, I don't even know how to, like, it's all flashy and metallic, and it's very clearly part of this persona. And... like, he makes no end of grief for Cody Rhodes leading up to WrestleMania, to the point that WrestleMania is a two-night event. They had to wrestle, Cody had to wrestle night one. He had to, in a tag match, with the stipulations for the main event match for night two on the line in the night one match. And that was the Rock and the previous champion Roman Reigns against Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins, who is the other, like, if one is the undisputed champion, the other is the heavyweight champion. Seth Rollins was the heavyweight champion. It's Raw and SmackDown, one from each brand. So he's got the other guy as his partner.
Those are different things?
Yes.
Oh. I thought it was all the same. Sorry.
No.
That's a legit question. No, I'm not trying to be a dick. I don't.
It's all good, man. And so the...
it's like NFL and UCFL or something?
Yeah. XFL.
XFL, right. That's it.
And so, like, the stories that... I felt so old school watching these because I was like, the stories that they told in those main events were absolutely amazing. They pulled me in, made me invested, and that's all the work of the commentators.
Yeah, and they're not talking while they're wrestling, are they?
The wrestlers. Oh. Well, I mean, the wrestlers are a little bit, and that was what made the first night so great. So The Rock is out there, and it's like, he can do, like, since he's come back, he can do whatever the fuck he wants. Like, they had blood on a Monday night, which they haven't had in years, because he wanted to. He made Cody Rhodes' forehead bleed one night, and everybody made a huge issue out of it, because that was always a no-no in the Vince era. So some of this was also to help shed light on, we're in a new era now. This is a different time. This is not Vince's show anymore. So there comes a point where people start getting going out of the ring and doing some shit around the announce tables and starting to introduce foreign objects. And the ref starts counting, and The Rock looks at him, points a finger at him, is just like, don't you start counting. He said, don't do it. You know who The Rock is, and I don't fuck around. I'll fire you. Because he has that power. He is on the board of TKO. That was part of the condition. That was part of what brought him back. He's on the board, and he got like 30 mil in stock. Plus another 9 for WrestleMania. So then they're wrestling all over the place. Now, The Rock hasn't had an actual, like a real match in over a decade. You would not have been able to tell from the way this match went. Like, they were able to make him look good. That's the beauty of a tag match. You can make somebody who hasn't wrestled in a while or who doesn't wrestle all that often, you can make them look really good because they don't have to go the whole time. So if they start to get winded, they got a partner who can take over for a bit. And as the match went on, they told this awesome story, and it was very clearly, you know, an uphill battle for Cody, because it's been that way the entire time. He's been fighting his way uphill to get his hands on the belt that his dad never touched. He touched it once and was denied ever having the opportunity to win it because Vince didn't like him. That is not a secret thing. That is very well known. Vince McMahon did not like Dusty Rhodes. But Dusty would make any gimmick Vince gave him work. Like, there was a time he put him in this yellow polka dotted outfit. Dusty went out and just fucking made it work because he could. He had that kind of charisma. And he would get over with it, which was even funnier. So they absolutely screw Cody over night one, which leads to what they called bloodline rules for night two, which meant anything goes, nothing was off limits, and that led to absolute shenanigans. Now the main event night one, this tag match, 44 minutes. And
is that a long time?
Oh my God, yes. That's a very long time.
I get winded after 4 minutes. Yeah, right.
It was 40.
Yeah, but I'm not a wrestler.
It was 44 minutes.
Well, I've seen them bouncing around, so I assume that's, you know.
It was 44 minutes start to finish, although the first 9 was entrances. Okay. Most of that was The Rock, like prima donnaing it. In his own way, his entrance was so over the top. Like when his music hits, flames go up, and then the camera pans back, and it's him standing in this giant bullhead symbol that's always been associated with him.
Strong-like bull.
It's just the absolute douchiest look. He's also carrying his own custom title belt that was gifted to him by Muhammad Ali's wife. So he looks even douchier because he's now out there with his own title. The People's Champion, because he got that moniker with permission from Muhammad Ali back in the 90s.
Right.
So did Ali actually do like WWF wrestling?
No. But out of respect and a desire, like The Rock wanted to use that moniker, but he wasn't going to do it without Muhammad Ali's blessing. Well,
but they just inducted Ali to the Hall of Fame. So right. That's what I was
wondering. Well, there are people who have been tangentially associated that get inducted, but that haven't necessarily wrestled a match. Like Bob Barker is in the Hall of Fame.
What?
Oh my God! He
beat the shit out of Adam Sandler. Sure,
he's showed up on a couple episodes of Raw and was like ridiculous, and the crowd loved him, and it made no sense why the crowd loved him because he showed up. It was like Bob Barker.
You don't think those people are sitting at home watching?
I know.
Price is Right all day.
So the match finally gets underway, and it goes pretty much how it was expected to go. Cody is just getting his ass beat fairly mercilessly. Like when it starts, night two, it's just the two of them, the champion and Cody Rhodes, going at it, which seemed weird because with Anything Goes and the Bloodline as a faction being fairly large. It was interesting that it was just the two of them at the time. And so they're going at it for a while, and then things start to look like they may be going Cody's way. So now one of the Uso brothers comes out. They've been fighting, so the Uso brothers are fighting. That's a whole thing. They're the children of Rikishi.
Is that from Ricky Tikki Tavi?
I thought Chad might know him.
Nope.
Okay. Fatu is
that? Oh, is I know that name.
Yes, they are Fatus, yeah. Or they are. Okay. That's the family. That's the Samoan bloodline family that they're all part of.
Okay.
So the one comes out, starts fucking with Cody. His brother comes out and drags him, like starts fighting with his brother. They go up the ramp, off the ramp, through a table. We don't see them again for the rest of the match. It goes on a little longer. Now, another part of the bloodline comes sneaking out from underneath the ring. He's been there the entire match at this point. We're halfway in, and does it's called a Samoan spike. It's a thumb to the throat.
Okay.
It was made popular years ago by Umaga, also known as Rosie. It's a whole thing. And it's
also, dirty move kind of thing.
Yes. But it's also the move that cost Cody the match last year. This guy came out, hit him with the Samoan spike, was able to get out of the way before the ref saw. Roman pulled off the win, 1-2-3. That was the end of that. This time, though, he comes out, hits it. Roman goes in for the pin. Cody kicks out. So now this guy's in the ring, and he's just beating the shit out of Cody. Roman Reigns is on his ass at the kind of across the ring, and he's getting yelled at to come fucking finish it by this guy who came out to assist him, which is maybe the hint at the first startings of a breakdown in the bloodline. So now it's this effectively 2-on-1 match, and now John Cena's music hits, because of course it does. And so he comes running out, and he takes the guy that was interfering, gets him out of the ring, puts him through the announce table. Gets back up in the ring to help Cody with his situation, since, again, anything goes. Now the Rock's music hits. Rock comes out, hits his finisher on John Cena and tells him to get the fuck out of the ring. And he says that. That was the beauty of both nights. The Rock is dropping F-bombs right and left when he's on camera. And whoever was working sound was not on top of things to catch him.
Wow.
That was a pay-per-view, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay.
So.
Well, it's on a streaming service. So.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So now The Rock is out there and the lights in the arena go out. And that bell tolls for The Undertaker. Which
that motherfucker, yeah, I know that name. How old is that guy? Like 70?
He's in his mid
58.
Yeah. He's in his upper 50s. The lights go out. The lights come back on. The Rock is looking up the ramp as you are supposed to do when the lights go out and you hear The Undertaker's bell toll. And of course he's behind him. And he turns around, gets choke slammed, lights go out again, Undertaker's gone. Rock is now out of the ring. So now it's back to just the two of them. Then music for the Shield hits. Now, the Shield was a faction that Roman Reigns, the previous champion, was a part of, with Cody Rhodes' tag partner from the night before, and there was a third member, but they were this faction that worked with CM Punk years ago. But that music hits is intended to be kind of a mind fuck to the champion, and it is. He starts looking around trying to figure out where they're coming from, because they were their big thing when that music would hit was they would come down through the crowd. That was their entrance. They always came down through the crowd. So he's looking up through the, he's looking up in the crowd, like, where are they? Like, who is it? Where is he coming from? And then kind of from behind comes Seth Rollins in his old Shield gear to get in the ring. And he's got a chair. This is significant because years ago, he betrayed the other two members of the Shield, Seth Rollins did. And when he did it, it was something like 30 chair shots between the two of them. Like, he just absolutely wailed on them with a folding chair. So he ends up getting the chair taken away. Roman has an opportunity to go after one or the other with the chair and takes the opportunity for the revenge shot. Which, as a human and you know, as a person, if you've been wronged, it makes sense. And then it goes on for a bit longer. And now it's back to kind of a more pure, more traditional kind of a wrestling match without all of the bells, whistles, and hoopla. Nobody else comes out to interfere. And at the end of it, and it was hard fought and he fucking earned it, Cody Rhodes wins. And it was powerful storytelling. Like it really was. And I can promise, if I could get any of you to come into it with an open mind, it is absolutely powerful storytelling.
Oh, no, I mean, like, I watched it a lot in middle school, but, like, I still get that it's just as good as any TV show would be with a lot of the stuff they're doing.
Like, just for frame of reference, the girl that they have who announces the wrestler, Samantha, she has a powerful voice and is fucking amazing when she does her introductions.
Does she get really huge lungs? By lungs, I mean boobs.
I knew what you meant. No, she's just really good at her job.
Okay.
Like, she is exceptionally good at her job. Like, she has an Instagram that is just reels of her doing intros. So it's her job to announce the winner. She's fucking crying.
Hmm. One of
one of the results announcers is crying. Things. What?
Knows what the results are going to be on some of this stuff ahead of time.
I mean, at a show like this, the people in the match.
Okay.
Maybe a handful of backstage folks.
Okay.
So she's crying. One of the announcers who's known Cody since he was little is getting choked up.
And sorry, you said this was Goldust's kid?
No, it's his brother. This is Dusty Rhodes' son.
Was Dusty Rhodes not Goldust? Who am I?
Goldust is also Dusty Rhodes' son. He had two.
Is there just a big age gap?
There was a bit of an age gap.
Like 8-10 years plus?
Yeah.
Okay. Because Goldust was like late 90s, early 2000s.
Yes. And then Cody was near the end of Goldust's original run.
Okay.
Early
2000s. But there's a bit of a gap there. Yeah. That makes more sense.
But like Dusty's thing was always, he was the American dream. He was the son of a plumber. So Cody left. And when he left, he was pissed. And so his thing was, you know, fine. If I can't be a dream, I'll be a nightmare. So he was the American nightmare, which it sounds like a silly gimmick, and it was at the time, but it is what it is, and it works for him. He ended the historic title reign and completed a story that he's been working for years. And cut a promo that was worthy of the best of his dad's.
Promo?
When they get on a mic and speak.
Oh, okay. To set up the next event?
Some of it was to set up the next event. Some of it was just at a celebration of the moment. From undesirable to undeniable is the line that they've been using a lot this week. Because there was a time when nobody wanted him.
But he's not a part of any kind of syndicate? What did you say? That's it.
No. I mean, he's got lots of supporters backstage. And there were so many people that were kind of on his side, but no, it's just him.
So now it's the man against everybody kind of story.
Although I did see one article that was talking about how since he beat Roman Reigns' gimmick is that he is the head of the table, the tribal chief of the bloodline. So there was one article that was talking about whether or not, since he beat the tribal chief and the head of the table, whether or not he was now head of the bloodline. So I'm curious to see if that actually becomes a thing. I don't think it will.
Yeah, it kind of ruins the whole.
Yeah. And then
bloodline.
Yeah. And then Monday night, I haven't watched Monday Night Raw or Friday Night SmackDown in years. And the Saturday and Sunday were so good that I was like, I really want to see the post WrestleMania Raw, because those are always really good, just anyways. I have to see what happens. And I haven't felt that way about wrestling in a long time. I had to know what came next. And it was The Rock announcing that he's got to leave for a little while, but he's coming back. And when he's coming back, since he was the one who pinned him Saturday night, he's coming for Cody.
Wait, I thought The Undertaker took him out.
That was Sunday night when he came to interfere. Saturday night in their tag match, The Rock is the one who ultimately got the pin. for the for his team.
Interesting.
It's just weird that like 25 years later, half these names are somewhat the same.
Yeah.
Like they just keep showing up.
I was going to say that, but it just seemed to like...
Yeah, when you said Cena, I'm like, wow. I just saw him in a movie.
He's been pretty open that he is probably at or very near the end of his run.
Yeah, he feels a not like not that he's.
I feel like everybody can see him now.
Yeah.
Sorry, does that work? Is that the same guy?
Yeah.
Is that the right guy?
That is okay. The guy. That was okay. Bravo. That was actually part of the Monday night thing as well. There's another wrestler who he's older than Cena, but they always play him up like he's crazy. He's currently a tag champ, won his first match at a WrestleMania, and he's been at like 20 of them. But it, like he was trying to set up a 3-on-3 match on Monday night, and he was like, it'll be me and my partner and a third guy you can't see. And that was how he set it up. And so it starts off as this weird handicap 3-on-2 match until they're about 2/3 of the way through, and then Cena's music hits, and it's like, the guy you can't see.
Okay.
But his big thing is always that John Cena was his childhood idol. He's older than Cena.
What?
He's crazy, apparently.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
So.
Wow. I feel like I have a lot of information that I can't use readily. Names that I'm sure I'm mixing up now in my head, but some that I knew.
I mean, that's kind of any fandom, though.
Yeah.
It's a lot of information. It's only good if you're talking to a certain group of people. Like, it's no different than anything else, TV show-wise, or anything that has a big following.
Yeah, that's it. That's what I got.
Been watching Critical Role, and they were doing some stuff. I don't know if you mentioned this before, Jeff, because you were kind of current on it, but they're doing stuff that we've done in the past.
Uh-huh.
And it always cracks me up. I'm like, are they listening to us? Like, we jump from, you know, adventure to adventure. We don't stick on a campaign. So, you know, but it's always funny when their story or some element they're doing, some weird thing that happened is something we've already toyed with or tripped over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We do have listeners in California.
Hmm?
I mean, I'm not saying that, you know,
it's one of them, but yeah.
I'm not saying they're out there stealing our shit either, but
well, how much of it is stealing? It's like, oh, that sounds like a good idea. I mean, I've listened to them and had ideas for
like
adventures and whatnot. Actually, I was in listening to them. I came up with like, I think I came up with two more kind of story nuggets, like that one I shared with you guys, I think last time, The Souls Cling to Me.
Yeah.
Yeah. One was ley lines, which are a pretty common occurrence in any story system that has like magic.
Yep.
You know, there are these ley lines where natural currents of magical energy circling, you know, the globe. What if they circled the globe? Sure. But what if they weren't locked in one place? What if they moved with celestial events, like, say, an eclipse that just happened, you know, or a comet streaks by or something, and then it shuffles these ley lines. And the places where they cross, either one or sometimes or two or sometimes three ley lines cross or intersect, is highly contested land because of the power potentials and research opportunities. And just because being in those places, magic is just more potent or easier to access. So it would set these basically undesirable locations on this continent or what suddenly become, you know, the hottest place to be, and it kind of create these nomadic colleges of science and magic and alchemy and all that stuff that would, you know, they don't have their towers to hide in. They have to chase these ley lines. And it isn't something like once every 20 years this happens. This happens like, you know, once a year, sometimes twice a year, these things shift. And whenever they fall across like a major city, those cities just kind of erupt into chaos because all the lowly people that are, you know, tinkering with these arts suddenly become way more powerful than they're capable of controlling. But yeah, that was an idea I had. And another one was, this one, I don't know what the setting would be. I don't know if it'd be like a fantasy setting or a even a futuristic setting, but Rift Riders, either like a sport where these rifts open up and you jump in them and are able to like kind of surf through them, but they don't always take you back. So sometimes it's an adventure, you know, getting to a place you can survive or what. But that's the only thing I had for that one. The ley lines one was a little more interesting to me.
I like the idea of like the ley lines having like today's magic level is whatever signs up in places.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Today's tide is very high. Like,
yeah, and then there's like a city, and it is now, perhaps the city was built, you know, centuries ago.
Rock and roll.
On a certain, was built a century ago because of the mathematical probability that a ley line intersects with this city more often than it doesn't. But over the centuries, because of abuse and because of, you know, power scales and whatnot, magic is, you know, outlawed or highly protected and guarded who's allowed to have access to it. So it becomes criminal when it intersects with said city. But each of these, like, constant cities that are, like, you know, in one place would have different rules and different views. You know, maybe the one city embraces it, and that's like cause celebration when this happens. Other people, you know, it's just a time of woe and chaos. But don't know. It's not a like a real story idea. It's just more of a, like a setting idea.
I dig it as a setting idea.
I could see that in a like a lengthy D&D campaign.
Yeah.
But
I dig that a lot.
And honestly, if with little effort, the two ideas could be combined, where ley lines intersect, you can open a rift and you can actually ride the ley line as like travel, fast travel to another intersecting point.
Reminds me a lot of the world I was building, the campaign I was running for Athena and my friends.
Like a high, super high magic magic world.
Well, that world, like that world, had a lot of fucked up problems. The part of it was also missing, like literally, like missing part of the
world looked like Pac-Man.
Yes, yes, that's a good way to put it. Yeah,
wasn't that one of the the end planet in Borderlands 3? It was blown apart, right?
Yeah, but it wasn't blown apart like that. It was more like just
had a big crack in it, and pieces of it were kind of orbiting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Once you got far enough north on this world, it is a fucking crater.
Yeah, Elizabeth came home today. She had a doctor's appointment, so she was hanging out. She had an eye doctor appointment like early morning and had a doctor's appointment in the afternoon, and she was tired, so she crashed out. And when she got home, you know, sat around and actually got her and Karen into a discussion about artificial intelligence and virtual realities where your consciousness would be uploaded to the cloud.
Yeah.
Because, you know, no matter how big or how fast we can build a spaceship, no guarantee a human being can survive the trip.
Sure.
So if we can't go, at least a facsimile of our consciousness should be sent. And on the way there, you know, a body is 3D printed to download you into, and the human race lives on as androids. The same, what is it, 144,000 people represent the rest of humanity's history, because androids can't really reproduce, and we can only make copies of these consciousnesses, which then, you know, being separate would sort of create a new person, but they're all based on the same kernel.
So, savers.
Huh?
What? You said same kernel. I Sanders?
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I don't know if that's the correct term, kernel. I'm just saying, like, the same little nugget of information. But I just thought that was kind of neat. Taking like the 144 tribes of Israel kind of stuff from the Bible and turning that into like, yep, they're going to inherit the Holy Land, but it's not on this planet.
It was the 12 tribes. It was 12 times 12 was 144.
Ah, okay. So there's only 12 people in each tribe?
No, there's 12,000.
Oh, okay. But yeah, I thought that'd be interesting.
Religious people aren't good at math.
No.
It's okay.
Wait, am I religious?
No.
I'm not good at spelling. That makes sense.
Correct.
Okay.
I think you're okay because you're just not good at spelling.
I didn't put my points in spelling.
Nope. So I've been playing the Borderlands 3
past a couple of days.
Was there some kind of update, or you just
I'm on Diablo? Just kind of frustrated with the fact that this Diablo season got extended a month.
Oh, okay. I really didn't even start it. Like, I logged in, I started a character, it might be like level 5, but I'm just gonna.
This season was not good. And just didn't want to play it anymore. But I didn't really have any. What was I going to do? I've got everything on the Eternal Realm, but I don't want to go back and do that. Because, like, it was different in Path of Exile, and you could kind of play the Eternal Realm because some parts of every season would carry over. Well, no part of a season is carrying over in Diablo. So it's just kind of like, oh, so this is boring as shit. So I'm like, okay, well, I guess I'll just, you know, go play a different game.
You come back to the old reliable.
Yeah. I've mainly been playing Arms Race. I know a lot of people hate Arms Race. I was not a big fan of Arms Race to start out.
It's definitely a different game. I mean,
it's
no guns. You only get what you find.
It's evergreen content.
Yeah.
You're never...
The tornado makes it so you can't really rely on going a certain direction, right?
Right. You can't rely on going a certain direction. You can't rely on having certain guns. You can't rely on really anything. So it's just kind of like, okay, well, I'll just play this. And, you know, because
when no my spec, PS- no.
Yeah, no. When my PS4 died, I didn't copy, like, I didn't bother porting anything over. So I just started over. So, you know, I'm finding all kinds of fun, cool gear that, you know, I can extract and then say, oh, I wonder if this purple is any good. Because, as we all know, I enjoyed the purple gear.
There were some purples better than uniques.
Yeah. And I have found my favorite gun in Borderlands 3. I have one again, so I'm a happy guy.
What's that?
The x2 Alien Barrel Malawan pistol. It's just a purple. It's called the Devourer.
Okay.
But they're, you know, it's just the Alien Barrel gun for Malawan. They have the pistol. It has just a bananas fast fire rate.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
kind of the like, what is that one that ricochets and does a different element?
Yes. This the Devourer shoots Torg like sticky projectiles.
Okay. Not really something I would associate to a Malawan. Okay.
Correct. So let's recap. x2 on the fires. Uh-huh. So two bullets, trigger pull, fully automatic, sticky uh-huh. rounds that explode. What's my favorite character?
Lowe's.
There you go. This gun is great. I have.
But doesn't done stickies only explode once you reload?
No, these do explode after a set amount of time.
Okay. But you can force them to explode by
Correct.
Okay. Because
Trust me.
I know the way you play Moe's. Her clips never end.
With a devourer in hand, you have to reload. The fire rate is just too high.
But what's the clip, like 24?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no way you're going to make that last more than 36.
Right. So, with a good minesweeper and...
Oh, wow, double blowing, yeah.
That's, yeah, with a minesweeper and Pearl of Ineffable Knowledge.
That's a lot of popping, yeah.
Yes, things just explode. It's maybe not like the best damage I could put together. I'll admit, but it is the most fun damage that I've put together.
Are you on Mayhem or just going straight?
Oh, yeah. No, Mayhem 11. I one magged Wotan with the Devourer. That was fun.
Is 4 coming out this year? Or
the prevailing theory is that they're going to release it this year. We haven't had an announcement. We haven't had anything.
I mean, they're normally like in November. There's
been sort of an announcement, though.
It's a lot about the movie, and I would think they want to capitalize on that.
I'm not counting anything that they've done so far as an announcement of Borderlands 4.
They've announced they're working on it. Not yes. Anything about releasing.
Yes, they have announced they're working on it. They've announced they've done this weird thing.
It only came out at all because Gearbox got bought.
Again, thank God.
Is that a good thing?
Yes.
Yes, it's a very good thing.
They got bought multiple times?
They were bought by Embracer, and Embracer's shit.
Okay. Yeah. Did they buy them in the last like 2 years and then get bought again recently? Or
yes.
They got bought towards the tail end of COVID.
Okay.
And Embracer is just bad for business for any game studio.
What do they make?
I don't know.
Nothing. Okay, good.
Bad decisions.
Oh, they're Red Ink, Wizard of the Coast.
Red Ink on a ledger.
I mean, Wizard is still making a lot of money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They still get there.
Hasbro, not so much.
Magic the Gathering crackheads. And D&D has tried to right the ship.
I think D&D is going to have to... replace some leadership before the community is sated.
Yeah.
I think they're probably going to have to spin off from Hasbro if they want to be like able to get back into like respected.
Probably.
I just don't see how being attached to Hasbro where they're like at any point they could make a decision about money.
Yeah.
More so than any other company would. Because Hasbro has just been milking everything from Wizards of the Coast for the last like 7-8 years.
And yeah, I know a lot of
setting in a lot of places.
Yeah. I know the Magic community is super unhappy with Hasbro.
Yeah. I mean, they've been putting out like Secret Lair stuff, and that is becoming like multiple releases a month sometimes.
Right.
And they keep messing with like the design of the packs.
Yeah.
So everything is just like,
what's that?
It's a mess. Like instead of, you know, the regular 15 cards, one rare, four uncommons, whatever
it used
to be, like they did have set packs and draft packs were like the traditional 15 card packs. Set packs were like a 12 card pack with an extra rare and some other foil treatment. They've got 57 different foil treatments now for shit too. But then they went and changed it to some other like 14 card pack or something that's supposed to cover both, but then they just jacked up the price on it. So now nobody's happy because it costs more to draft and you're not getting as many rares as you were before with the other boosters. So they just compromised and pissed off both sides. And then they spend the rest of their time just releasing special edition
Commander decks
and secret world foils.
Yeah,
one
or secret rare.
Speaking of, I actually picked up the Fallout ones.
Yeah. I will always play Commander if anybody wants to. We just don't normally have time. Like, I enjoy playing Commander. I still enjoy owning Magic cards. I just don't have the time dedicated to actually playing consistently or building decks.
So, game. The Realm is having Pauper tournaments once a month.
Yeah. Are you talking about those? Have you started any?
I have not had a chance to go to one, but I would like to go to a Pauper tournament and just check it out.
What is a Pauper tournament?
Commons.
You're still going to get murdered because all the commons are super expensive.
You build a competitive Pauper deck for like $60.
Right, but then you can still spend hundreds and more on a Pauper deck.
Well, sure, if you're going for like specific printings.
I guess it depends what decks you, there's a couple of commons that just don't, there's only one printing or.
Right. Yeah, no, I'm
limited reprint type thing. So I guess even if you had 5-10 of those $20 cards in your deck, it wouldn't be outrageous. Right.
Yeah, it's not like my buddy who is staring down almost $10,000 on his competitive Commander deck.
Right. Yeah, because especially with that, like if there's 200 super expensive cards, there's not going to be more than a couple of them in the deck anyway.
Right.
They're all in separate decks, so.
Like, I think the thing that blows my mind is the cards that are expensive now for like Commander are shit fucking cards from when we played.
Oh yeah, it's entirely gimmicks and stuff that just didn't get reprinted.
Like Gilded Drake. I remember watching people pull Gilded Drakes out of the Urza's packs and fucking throwing them away because they were garbage.
Oh, there's been a couple of those types of cards where people just were like, this is terrible, and now it's only good because four other cards synergize with it 20 right. years later.
Right.
But, like, there's a reason they didn't reprint it, so...
Right.
If you've got it, it's worth money.
Like, Gaia's Cradle was a... It was the Talarian Academy for green. I don't remember what its trigger was. Like, it's like $700 now.
Right. Like in high school, I took a deck to school and somebody stole it and I had four of those in it. I would have sold it several times between now and then, so it wouldn't have mattered. But
Right. I mean, I thought that when I sold out the first time, I did really good. And then I found more cards and I sold those and thought I did really good. And at that point, I had like one deck and then a bunch of Force of Wills and some other like meh stuff from when I played. Like just like stuff I wanted to hold on to for, I don't know, nostalgia or whatever. And I slowly sold that stuff out and I did really well. And now I'm looking at stuff and I'm like, you know, I could have fucking retired had I not sold then when I thought I did really well and sold now.
Yeah, I mean, maybe.
No,
there's definitely a lot of stuff that, like, if I could go back, would be worth so much money now.
Yeah, I mean, I had one of my like favorite cards. I had several hundred of, and they're like $1,000 a piece now.
What was that?
Fuck. Give me a sec. It is this stupid fucking land. Is that MTG Legends? And at the time, it was a shit card. So I was able to just scoop them up. I loved the fucking artwork on it. I'm sorry, it's gone down in price. No, that's it. Tabernacle at Pendril Vale.
Okay.
Like, it was like a $5 rare at one point.
Was still kind of expensive back then.
Kinda.
Considering there were cheap ass rares still.
Right. It was a legendary land. All creatures now require an upkeep cost of 1. In addition to any other upkeep cost they may have. If the upkeep cost for a creature is not paid, the creature is destroyed. It's a $4,000 card now.
Fuck.
Well, in near mint.
Well.
In like excellent condition, it's 36.
You still would have had a lot in good condition. I mean, you
would have thrown
them around in between now and then. It wasn't like you were...
No, they were in a binder.
Collection. Right.
Yeah, they like... It was one of those cards, like, nobody wanted it. I thought the art looked really cool. It was a very clean-looking card. And Legends came out, like, right before I started playing. Like, maybe, like, within a year, I think. Okay. So everybody was kind of like, yeah, this card is kind of meh. Because it was legendary, so you could only have one in play at a time. So I just
fucking... And you couldn't tap it for mana.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
There is so much shit out there now that, like, just seems like it would have been the absolute worst card back in the day.
Oh, absolutely. And
it's just like, oh, it's good now because it does this one other stupid trigger.
Yep. Yeah. I'm just, I look at the cards, you know, and then to think like Lotus Petal. I know the four of us, between the four of us, we probably had 200 Lotus Petals at one point.
Yeah.
It was a fucking common. It's a common. They are $50 a piece right now.
Yep. And those pauper decks.
Generally, Pauper doesn't run them because it's a restricted card.
Oh, so it's only a one-off now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, if you're playing Commander, you know...
Right. They're all restricted cards.
Right. I have heard people talk about a Pauper Commander format, and that just sounds awful.
Why are you talking to these people?
I mean, look, it sounds fun if a lot of decks, like if there were a lot of deck lists out there to start from, because I don't know a lot of shit that's out there right now.
Right.
Like, I could see them being fun to play because you could just play some real stupid basic cards that, like, I've always enjoyed stuff like Grizzly Bears. And
yeah,
they're not really good, but
no,
they were a staple back in the day of just like, yeah, they're just there in case nothing better shows up.
Mountain Gorilla.
Yeah. Well, like, we would, when Jeff and I lived together, we would have, like, the Bad Magic Night. And we would get people together and, like, just, I don't know, were we drafting out of that box or were we just like, here's the box, build a deck?
I think it depended what the mood was.
Okay. But it was the 5,000 count box of shit cards. Oh
God, yeah, it was just absolute trash.
And then came that one fucking night where, as a joke, you and I were like, "Oh, I played mono black, and I think were you doing mono white or mono blue?"
Oh Jesus, this is 25 years ago, man.
I know. And we found out that the mono decks that we put together that night, I mean, they were built out solely out of the shit box, but they were the best bad decks you could build.
They were surprisingly competitive.
Yes. To the point where I know that I took that stupid mono black deck to a extended tournament. I don't know if you took yours or not. I think
we both did.
And we didn't do awful. Like, we didn't make the cut. We didn't make the finals. But we made it. Like, we finished Squiss with winning records.
We definitely made an impact.
Yes. And I think the highlight of the deck for me was playing, like, first turn Swamp, double Dark Ritual, double Kumbaj Witches, and taking 1 point of mana burn. And that was like the super awesome deep tech play of the deck. I couldn't even tell you why that was like the best play. I don't even remember what the witches did. God, they were so bad. Tap to do one damage to any target. Opponent may also do one damage to any target. You may choose your target before your opponent does, but damage is inflicted simultaneously.
Mutual assured destruction.
Yes.
It doesn't seem good because it wasn't.
No.
That's exactly it. These were really not good. I think that's why they did well, because no one expected you to play shit.
No, nobody expected double Kumbaj Witch's first turn.
Because we may not always have been like top tier players, but we always showed up with interesting things.
Yes. Yes. Oh, that's what it, because. Oh shit, what was that fucking card? There was that black card that they couldn't target. It was also in the deck. So you get the Kumbaj Witches and you get the other dummy in play, and they would just have to deal the damage to you, the player.
Yeah.
And you had the other fucking dumbass just sitting there, just eating their life. God, it was so bad. It was so bad.
I miss those days too.
What's that?
I miss those days too.
Yeah. And then you look at cards now. Death Cloud, 3 black and X. Each player loses X life, discards X card, sacrifices X creatures, then sacrifices X lands. That's a $13 rare in Modern. That shit would have been fucking banned back in the day. But hey, it's okay. At least Magic Wizards aren't being second dinner right now, so.
What are they doing?
The patch today is not people are not happy.
I haven't noticed a whole lot. What changed?
Zabu is dead.
Yeah, I knew that.
Eliath is dead. Lady Deathstrike, who wasn't great but had uses, is dead.
Why?
Okay, so she was a 5/4 on reveal, destroy everything with power less than hers at this location. People liked her because you could, like, you know, forge or do other things to, like...
Yeah, just make her monstrous and take out a bunch of little shit,
She's now a 5-7 and she destroys everything at the location with 3 or less power.
I still think that's a balanced card.
It is. It's just not a card that anyone's going to play.
Sure. I mean, feel like they just want everybody to play whatever the new cards of the month are.
Yeah, it, that's and really what...
Stop playing with the old ones until we need them again for next month's new cards of the month.
Yeah, the Zabu change, dude, that... I mean, they did not think that change through.
No, they specifically noted that they're just basically making Zabu not exist while they playtest some stuff, and then they'll see what they want to turn back on.
Well, but here's the thing. Like, Zabu is dead in the manner that Zabu used to work, but I want a gold conquest ticket doing some nutty things with Zabu that they clearly did not think through. Because when you play Wong on turn 4 and turn 5, one of the two cards you play is Zabu on your Wong.
It's not the next 3 or 4, or the next 4 costs, it's just the next turn.
The next turn. So I went from being able to play 2 4 costs on turn 6 to now I can play 3. Which
how does Zabu work now?
He's a 2-3 on reveal. On your next turn, 4 cost cards cost 1 less. So if you Wong that shit on your next turn, they cost 2 less. If you have Wong on one of the stupid locations, or you get Mystique down, because you can Mystique and Wong, Mystique and Zabu on turn 5, you could drop a hand of 4 costs on turn 6. Which sounds not great until
you... That sounds like a god draw, a must-have kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, you see most of your cards.
Yeah.
It's not like half your deck's still there when you're done.
Right. With no card draw from anything, there are 3 cards left in your deck at the end of the game.
I mean, the big difference will just be what cards you get to play on the final turn, because they may not always be useful. But you should have enough to be able to play.
Correct.
The rest of your hand, unless you got something else crazy in there.
Yeah, it's...
I feel like I'm just switching to whatever the card of the week is, if I have it, to meet the requirements for the...
I mean, U.S. Agent is just such fucking dog shit as well. Like, holy shit.
Yeah, like, he seems very much like something I would want to put in when I make the decks where I just want to make everyone else hate playing their decks.
Well, what's he do?
He's a 2-3.
Okay.
Ongoing. Cards that cost 4, 5, or 6 have negative 3 power at this location.
Okay.
That's one way to just make one location shitty.
Yeah, but how many 4, 5, or 6 cost cards are you going to have at one location?
Well,
at most, I would think, I don't know, 3?
Maybe. And that's if you're doing, like...
Wong shit.
Wong, Dr. Doom, Odin, or something. With some sort of ramp or turn 7 or something. But even then, it's a 2-3. And so you're holding on to play 2-3 late in the game to surprise them. Or you're just like, oh, okay, I guess I'm just not going to play him there. Because, you know... It's telegraphed ahead of time because he's a 2 cost.
Yeah, but if you get the right location, sometimes it's worth
screwing up. Yeah, you get those locations where you can't play high-powered or high-cost people.
It's not a good card.
No.
I have a surfer deck that I am bouncing him around in and out of. And that's like he works in surfer because you're always kind of trying to find like a techie two drop for a surfer deck. And you're also like, keep in mind, US Agent kills, well, doesn't kill, but he fucks the power on your 4, 5, and 6 cost cards as well.
It's right, not just if you're playing surfer, there's not that many of those.
Right. You're probably running
Sarah.
Absorbing Man and Sarah. So yeah. Yeah, it's not a good card. In there's been a lot of that lately. Like they're either releasing Red Hawks or US Agents. There's not a lot of in between here. And it's pissing people off.
Well, we're dinging 10 o'clock. Do we want to?
Yeah, we'll be talking about this next week too.
Pause for doggy potty? And
yep.
Yeah, probably should. Probably should.
Well, we've been fools. We've been rushing.
Have we?
I mean,
we've been trundling.
It's more of a slow
trundle. You're a bastard.
I love that word bothers you so much.
It doesn't. That's what he expects me to say when I do it. So
I just enjoy how many times I've just heard it in real life.
I've heard it way more than I should.
Right.
Matt Mercer loves to say it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I feel like it got like...
It's one of his go-to, this character is walking funny words.
Uh-huh.
We are down, right?
No. Oh, okay. We will be here in a second so that you can say whatever awful thing you need to say. Be excellent to each other, everybody.